and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored as always by those rather lovely people at Natural Grower. Now, Natural Grower supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. They're absolutely crammed with certified organic growing power, and if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and veg, your flower beds and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning, certified, organic, peat-free compost and fertiliser are the very best you can buy. And your plants and gardens will love you for using it. All products are certified organic, they're 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those rather lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 15% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop MIC15 into the apply coupon field when you check out. In this week's episode, I chat to Lucy Hutchings, or She Grows Veg if you follow her on her popular Instagram account. In 2018, Lucy took to Instagram to chart her journey of growing her own fruit and vegetables. And I think it's fair to say it took off like a rocket, and now Lucy has a following of over 180,000. In addition to her Instagram account, Lucy is a writer, author, garden designer, entrepreneur, and alongside business partner Kate Cottrell, has just set up the UK Heirloom Seed Company, which we'll talk about in this episode. In recent years, she's exhibited at Hampton Court and Gardeners World Live, has written a book and appeared on Gardeners World Live alongside Francis Tophill, a previous guest on the podcast, and was featured in the TV programme Build a Dream Home in the Country. Today, I chat to Lucy about her career to date, and she also shares with us exclusively her plans for her stand at the prestigious Chelsea Flower Show in May this year. So, without any further ado, here's our chat, and my apologies for the audio on my side, which was playing up during the course of the interview. Lucy Hutchings, also known as She Grows Veg, welcome to the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast.
Hello.
Hello. Now, I'm going to throw some numbers and some figures at you. 180,000 followers on Instagram. That's impressive. Author, writer, entrepreneur, businesswoman, gardener, and now, as if that list wasn't enough, co-director of the UK Heirloom Seed Company with Kate Cottrell. That's a pretty impressive CV. How do you feel about it?
I feel pretty overwhelmed, to be honest. Yeah, it's been a busy few years, to be honest. And every time I think, right, that's it. That, you know, that's good. We've done good now. There's something else. But I feel this is where we're at now. I think, you know, I found my niche with the seed company. It all feels like it's been building to this point.
Okay, well, we'll come on to the seed company and what's happening there, what you and Kate are up to. But I want to take you back. For anybody who doesn't know, and there can't be many, when you started on Instagram in 2018, did you have any idea? Did you have a vision for where you wanted to go with this?
I really, really didn't. That's the funny thing. I think when I joined, I was an enthusiastic grower of food, but without any real knowledge. And I just wanted to engage with a community of people. They were possibly, say, a little bit younger minded and had a slightly different approach and wanted to kind of share knowledge and experiences in a way other than kind of the traditional gardening club or gardening books or gardening media, which I found at that time was kind of aimed at, should we say, a slightly older crowd. So really just in search of more like-minded people, which is why I joined. And I think because my background had been in design, I liked the idea that Instagram was pictorial and all about images, because I love images and I respond well to images. So that's why I joined up. And it was really just to kind of share my journey and meet people, even if it was just digitally. I had no agenda whatsoever. I really didn't expect the account to grow at all. And then it did start to grow. So at that time, I was kind of looking at potentially well, I was looking at changing career or looking at a new career, and I knew that growing food just made me really, really happy. So I thought I will run with this and see where it takes me. So it was a few years of kind of saying yes to every opportunity that came my way, whilst also retraining. So I did retrain in horticulture, I did a diploma in horticulture and a couple of garden design courses, thinking that that would be the way I went into something a little bit more conventional than where I've ended up. And it's been an amazing journey. I've had so much fun and done so many amazing things. But yeah, when I started it, I did not know where this was going to end at all.
And in those first few months, it was noticeable there was no sign of you on your Instagram grid. There was lots of pictures of the veg that you were growing and the produce. So was it a conscious decision? Did somebody say, hang on a second, where are you? Or did you think I ought to show myself?
I think I started off like most people, and I this is probably going to sound crazy when I say it, but I used to hate having photos taken of me. I was so camera shy, and that was still very much the case when I started the Instagram. It really wasn't about sharing me at all. It was just about sharing the plants and what I was growing and having some fun. But I think I'm the type of person, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to immerse myself in it properly. So when I decided that I would, see what happened with the Instagram account and really go, full on with it, I realized that the accounts that were growing and that were getting more of an engagement did have a human as well as plants. And so I still remember the day that I bit the bullet and took a photograph with me in it. And I must have taken 50 photographs going, oh God, no, oh God, no, I can't do that one. Oh no, that's awful.
I guess now you don't even think about taking pictures of yourself because you have become the face of everything that you do.
Yeah, and it does, you do, it's funny how quickly you get anesthetized to it. And it's one of the questions, there's questions that you get asked a lot when you are in my position. And one of them obviously is, I'd love to grow my Instagram account. How do I do that? And I got asked that by individuals and by brands and things. And I always say, like, you do have to be, there has to be a human. People like people and people respond better to people. So, and everyone starts the same way. Everyone starts going, oh, I hate photographs. I hate being photographed. I don't want to do it. But it's funny how quickly you stop caring. You would know.
Well, yeah, that chimes with me as well because taking pictures of yourself, it's always a bit of a squirm. And even like talking on a podcast, hearing your voice back, but you get used to it. It just becomes the day job.
You do.
You're nothing if not consistent because when we spoke live on Instagram going back a few years ago, you said then you don't like to do things in half measures. You're a full-on Sagittarius. And you've just said that now. So you're definitely consistent. And it's obviously doing the trick.
It's yeah, it's definitely the way I roll, which is, yeah, I think how I've ended up doing what I'm doing and starting this the seed company, because that's been where my passion has lain the whole way through this. It's been heirloom veg, unusual crops, gotten things, and that's just what I've been always been fascinated in doing. So it has been quite a linear journey in a way to where I've ended up. But yeah, I'm not very good at compromising. Like, if I'm gonna do it, I'm really gonna have to see how far I can take it.
So picking up on the heirloom side of things, where did that passion come from? I remember there was a tomato or something atomic.
Oh,
Tomato.
atomic grape, probably.
And these beautifully colored vegetables and tomatoes. Where did that passion come from? I mean, just from looking at things, I can sort of guess visually they look great.
I think it actually came out of Instagram, because when you first start growing veg, you go to the garden centre inevitably, and you look at all the rows of the packets of seed, and every single tomato is red and round, and every cabbage is conventional and green, and like, it's just everything's the same, and it's pretty much the same as what you see when you look in the supermarket aisles. And so you have this, you just pre-programmed to that's what veg looks like. And then when I joined the Instagram community, obviously you immediately start seeing all these beautiful pictures from all over the world. And suddenly I was like, hang on a minute, that tomato's black and that one's rainbow colored. And these are amazing. Why? I want to grow that. Why would I want something red and round? Why would I want an orange carrot? So it was initially, always been a very visual person, just because that's what my training's in. I think aesthetics is important. I think we consume the world with our eyes before we do anything else. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to be surrounded by things that are visually inspiring, as well as intellectually or inspiring, or from a flavor perspective when you're talking about food. So that's kind of how I'm pre-programmed anyway. So as soon as I saw that there was more out there, that was it. There was never a round tomato again. Like, there's not been a straight orange carrot in my garden since that point. I only want to grow the more interesting stuff, because why would you want the boring stuff? You can go to the supermarket and you can buy it there. And that's not what it's about. It's about having something more interesting than that. And then as I kind of got more and more engrossed in that journey, because obviously, as we've already discussed, I can't do things in half measures. So it wasn't just like, I'll try and buy that packet of seed and grow it. It's like, right, I'm going to get books and I'm going to read about the history of these things, and why is that one black, and just really understanding more about it. And I discovered that actually a lot of these plants, that is the way they're supposed to look. And we've bred it out of them to have something that's really consistent and conventional. And I'm quite into kind of more natural things, so like not using chemicals, and that's in my garden, but it's also in the home, it's in skincare and in food, obviously. So I think I was just really interested in the fact that we've moved so far away from what these plants originally used to look like. And to be honest, they were more interesting in the first place, that we've forgotten. And then we look at those plants now and go, oh, isn't that a novelty? It's a purple carrot. But actually, that's the colour they're supposed to be. We bred them to be orange in tribute to the Dutch royal family. Who knew?
You walk into, let's say, M&S versus Mother Nature. In M&S, everything's the same size. It's exactly the same colour. That's not how it comes off the trees, how it comes out of the ground. But we've been sort of almost brainwashed that we have to have an apple that's this round, this size, this colour. And then anything different then, it's like, my goodness me, what's that? It's just so nice to embrace the fruit and veg and the food that we eat as Mother Nature intended it to be, rather than it being processed and packaged and put into a certain sort of size and grid. Just
totally agree. It really is. And I think people forget that that aisle in the supermarket is a very carefully curated selection from the buyer, from the shop. That's what they think you want. And there's actually a very limited supply there. So you've got cherry tomatoes and you've got some slightly bigger tomatoes, and you may or may not have a beefsteak, but they don't all have it. You know, you've actually got within each category a very tiny selection of plants to choose from. And again, I still find that if you go to most garden centres, the seed selection there, although there's a lot more varieties to offer, visually, it's very much in line with what you find in the supermarket as a general rule. Slowly, but it's changing. But I think that is being led by the movement, you know, that I'm kind of jumping on and championing, which is that people want these plants. They want something more interesting. They want something more natural. And I think as well, part of it is led by people are way more conscious of where their food comes from these days. Mm. And that also includes the food that they're growing. And, you know, we've become more aware of genetic modification within food, and people really don't want any GMO food, and they're very conscious of that kind of thing. And I think that hybridization, and the fact that those F1 varieties that most seed that we're sold in conventional garden centres is kind of linked in some people's minds with genetic modification, rightly or wrongly, because it's nowhere near as straightforward as that. Right. But I think the fact that they are a man-made creation is off-putting for some people, and people want something that actually reproduces in the way nature intended, just like open-pollinated things do.
Absolutely. Big name drop. I was speaking to Jekyll McVicar earlier this week, and we were saying the same thing about this movement and how independent nurseries have such a range of plants. Whereas you go into a larger garden centre, you have your bog standard lavender, your bog standard rebeccia. So it's great that people like you
are behind this and starting to open up the doors wider so we can see there's not just this much choice, there's this much choice actually out there. We just need to open our eyes and not be so sort of judgmental in what we're expecting.
Oh, absolutely. And I think people are really, it's being led by consumers, by people, because I've wanted to do what I'm doing for a number of years, and I've looked at multiple different ways to do it. So I knew that people were wanting heirloom varieties. So the journey to where I am now has been quite a long and interesting one. So I was getting lots of messages online from people saying, you know, these varieties that you're growing are amazing, and how can I grow them? And in the vast majority of cases, they couldn't, because they're not available in this country or sold, you know, widely. And I've swapped seeds with collectors and breeders and things. So I had this amazing collection of seed that basically no one else could access. So I knew that there was an appetite for that kind of seed. So I started by having conversations with, you know, other seed companies and things, going, I know this market's there. Maybe we can do something, you know, because I know that people want heirloom veg. And very much the response that I've had throughout the industry, the established industry, was they really don't. People want F1s. They want the reliability of hybrids. Otherwise, it knocks their confidence and they won't grow again. So we only really sell hybrids as a general rule, because there's no market for open pollinated seed. It's like, it's really not the message I'm getting. So, yeah, it's been an interesting one. And the only way that I found to do it was to do it ourselves. So that's what we've done.
Okay, so before we talk about that at length, let's just talk about this journey that you've had. Obviously, Instagram has changed your career. Let's talk about 2021, a fantastic year for you, a show garden and a book. Tell us about that. How did they come about?
Straight out of lockdown. Back, like when I was, like I said, I, you know, saw that the account was growing, and I thought, we'll just run with it and see where it goes. And I started saying yes to basically every offer that I was made, just to see what came out of it. One of those offers was, do you want to write a book? So I was like, I am really dyslexic. Are you sure you want me to write a book? They were like, no, that's fine. So I did. So I it was, you know, the perfect lockdown activity, because there's nowhere to go. So it was during lockdown that I wrote the book. And it was an amazing thing to be able to do. I feel very lucky. I think, if I'm completely honest, I wish I'd written it probably 2 years later, because I think it would have been a very different book. But at the time, I was very kind of steered by the publisher, and, you know, it's a lovely book, but I don't think it's probably the book I would have written now. But I feel very privileged to have been able to put that out there when I did. And then, yeah, that year that it came out, I did the little allotment show garden at Hampton Court, themed around the book, so with all the projects from the book displayed in the garden. And it was lovely. It's just the message about trying to get more people to grow food, because I really think anyone can grow food. And I think as well, it's a really accessible way into horticulture, because everyone eats and everyone can get enthusiastic about food. I think there's probably a lot of people that would be interested in the idea of growing food, where if you said, are you into gardening? They'd say, no, I'm not into gardening. It's not my thing. So I feel like there's a lot of opportunity there to get more people doing it. So really, the book and the show garden that I presented were both about showing a completely different way that you could potentially be growing food. So you didn't need an outside space. Like, lots of the projects are for indoors or very small spaces, or things that would fit within a kind of beautiful home, so that, you know, you're not got a kind of messy, muddy area as some people think they're going to have if they start growing food. So yeah, it was a very interesting year. Another very interesting year.
Yeah. And so you talked about the book, and perhaps you'd rather write that book now, but surely sort of like, that's another project, surely. We're now waiting for book two, which, as you said, different from book one, different from the book you wrote then. So that's something to look out for.
It's definitely on the list. I think it's just time. I need more time in my life, or another one of me or something.
With the show garden at Hampton Court 2021, again, cutting your teeth on show garden, which then led the way to 2023, which was another incredible year for you. So tell us about 2023.
Yes. So 2023 was kind of the year that changed everything, I would say. It's a real landmark year in my life. I started the year, basically, it was one of those conversations that snowballs. So I'd started having a conversation with Gardeners Wildlife where someone had sent me the application form for a beautiful border. So I started having that conversation. I was like, well, if I'm going to do a beautiful border, maybe I'll just do a small garden. And then it snowballed, well, if I'm going to do a small garden, how much more work can it be to just do a show garden? And so that's where I ended up. But on a tiny budget. So put in the designs and I was overjoyed when it was accepted and really excited, and then got the amazing Hillier Garden Centres on board to sponsor. But the whole way through it was all on a very small budget. So, you know, show gardens, the budget just, you know, it can be it.
Escalates.
Have a number and triple it, and you're probably nowhere near. So we actually did that garden on a budget of £3,000, which is pretty much unheard of, I think, for a show garden.
That's impressive, because I saw the garden and I didn't know the budget, and that is wow.
Yeah, so that meant that we basically, well, I grew all the plants pretty much myself. So Helia sent some of the more established perennials, and obviously the trees, I did not grow them. They lent them, but everything else I grew myself. So it was kind of a double-edged sword, because with show garden judging, one of the things that's judged is the quality of the plants, and it has to be kind of nursery quality, perfect plants. And when you are growing thousands of plants by yourself, it's very difficult to achieve that. So I knew that in the judging that we were going to get marked down there. But the interesting thing is that because everyone walked onto the garden and went, this is something I could do, and they knew that I had, with a very small budget, grown it myself, as largely from seed, actually the response that we were getting was really positive from the general public, because it felt like an achievable garden. And they also loved the message, because it was an ornamental garden. So we presented a garden that looked like a fully ornamental garden.
Yeah.
But every single plant in the garden was edible. So there were traditional conventional vegetables in there, obviously of their more ornamental forms, because that's how I roll. But then there were also a lot of commonly grown ornamental garden plants that people don't realize are actually food crops. So we had dahlias in there, which are a root crop, and we had hostas in there. That was the plant that we spoke about more. I lost count of the number of times each day that someone went, you can't eat a hosta. But yes, you can. Actually, you can. They are eaten like asparagus in Asia, but we don't eat them here. That's amazing. That was the conversation that we had almost every time. Hostas blew people's minds, but everyone needs to eat their hostas. They're delicious.
Coming to sort of growth, is it the shoots are supposed to be the tenderest? And
Yeah. So you literally treat it like you would a clump of asparagus. So the new shoots that appear in spring, you would take off a portion of those as you would take off a portion of the asparagus spears. And then after a while, you leave it for it to bounce back and build up its strength again during the rest of the year. But the benefit is that you have much nicer ground cover for the rest of the year and a much more attractive plant, because asparagus ferns are straggly and annoying and need constant weeding.
And is that all hostas? Do they all fall under that umbrella of being edible?
Absolutely all hostas.
Taking off our hostas as they start to come through. And what would we have them with? Do they need to be dressed or...?
No, just literally think of them like asparagus, and they taste very similar as well, but without the unfortunate after effects, shall we say. So you don't get any of that. Another benefit. But yeah, the flavour is actually quite similar to asparagus. You'd eat it the same way. So really lovely, just sautéed in butter and eaten as tightly curled spears.
Well, I have a rather large collection of hostas, so I'm going to be, my diet's going to change in the weeks to come. Now, it was 100% edible, the secret homestead. And you were talking about the people loved it. And of course, that was reflected with the People's Award.
Yeah, we were really happy. So we did win the People's Choice Award, which was amazing. And I think it's just because it felt so achievable for people, and it also opened people's eyes to what an edible garden could be, that it didn't have to be, a kind of allotment style space with veg in rows and, that kind of traditional homespun vibe. It could be a really beautiful, really inspiring space to be, where you would get a huge and diverse harvest all the way through the year.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
And then it didn't stop there. TV became quite a big thing in 2023. So tell us about your TV appearances.
Yeah, so right at the beginning of the year, we had a TV show come out that we had filmed the previous year about building our homestead. So my husband, well, now husband, and I kind of built our homestead from scratch to try and create an eco home and a piece of land that we could be self-sufficient from, or as self-sufficient as possible. And we filmed that with Channel 5, so Build a Dream Home in the Country, I think it was. I forget. Anyway, so that aired right at the beginning of the year. So that was quite an amazing start to the year. And then we went straight into the build-up for Gardeners World Live. And we're very lucky that the BBC wanted to follow the journey to the show with the creation of gardens. So started filming almost straight away with them as well. So then that culminated with the coverage at the show with a lovely chat with gorgeous Frances Tophill, so who loves her food just as much as I do. So yeah, that was amazing. They did the most wonderful piece of coverage on the garden, and I think did a fantastic job of really getting across the message that we wanted to, that you can have a beautiful garden and you can eat it as well.
And I think that's really key because I think some people probably still think you need masses of land to be able to grow your own. It needs to be a set sort of place. It can't be mixed in. And I think that message of just having a glorious garden, some of which or all of which you can eat, it's just wonderful. It really is. That's great to hear people like you pushing that and making us rethink what a garden actually is.
Yeah, well, I think space can be at a premium for a lot of people. Gardens get smaller and smaller, and some people don't even have access to a garden. They may have a balcony or nothing at all. So how do you make the most of the space that you have? And you don't necessarily want to have to choose between having a food garden and a beautiful kind of outdoor room. So, and I don't think you have to. I think you can have the best of both worlds.
So, in amongst this incredible year, am I right in saying you reconnected with Kate and then things really started to take a turn? So, tell us how that all came about. How did this meet up with Kate, who you knew, I believe, and
We did.
tell us the story.
Yes. So it's one of these things that I think, you have moments in your life where everything just feels a little bit like fate must be getting involved somewhere, because it's all just slotting into place so perfectly that it must be meant to be. So it came out of the show garden. So we were well on the way to Showtime, and I was starting to get a bit panicky and saying to Mike, my husband, I'm going to have to build a show garden. I'm all on my own and I don't know what to do. And then we're going to kind of get requests to design gardens. And I kind of think kind of accidentally end up with a bit of a garden design company that I don't have time to run on my own. And I'm not sure what to do. And within, a day or so of that panicky conversation, I get a message from Kate. Now, Kate and I had studied together at Beth Chateau Gardens garden design, and that was about 5 years ago now. So this was back in that time where I retrained when I decided that I was going to go, full no holds barred into horticulture and see where it took me. And we sat next to each other on the first day of the course, and we sat next to each other every single day for a year and got on like a house on fire. And sometimes, you just meet people and you get on really well, and it's easy and it's brilliant company. And we'd stayed in touch, but kind of she'd gone off and done a big high-powered marketing job in the city, and I had gone off and done all the various bits and pieces that I'd done. So she reached out and said, I've seen that you're doing a show garden. If you need any help, let me know. I'll take some time off work because I don't really love what I'm doing, and I'd love to reconnect with some more gardening and things. So let me know if you need some help. And so I was like, oh, do you know what? I think we should go for a coffee because I have an idea. And so we did. We had a coffee together, and I said, you know, I've got the show garden. I feel like there's more happening here and there's more opportunity here, and I'm not entirely sure how to kind of grab it on my own. You know, I work on my own. It can be very lonely being in social media and being self-employed. You're on your own all the time. And she was like, well, her background is in marketing and digital marketing and things. So she totally got all the opportunity and saw so much more there as well. And she handed her notice in about a week later, I think.
My goodness.
Yeah. And then by the time we went to Gardeners World Live, that was the end of her notice period. And then it was full time from there on the company.
So in that coffee that you had with Kate, had you actually talked about this possible company that you could set up? Or were you just talking about the show garden and possible design opportunities that might have come out of that?
No, it was about setting up a company, and that there was so much opportunity there, and how, you know, what were the opportunities that we were going to take, and what would we do with it all. So the initial plan was to obviously start the design agency, which we did and launched at Gardeners World Live. But even in that first conversation, I said, I have been trying to start a seed company for years now. And I know the market's there, and I know the appetite's there, and I know the passion from people is there, but I can't do it on my own. It's too big. So that was always phase two. But I think we thought that we would maybe give it a year or so. But we just start having some early conversations with people. So we did start kind of reaching out to people just to feel out some options on how we might do it. And again, it was another one of those things where everything just slotted into place perfectly. And we found immediately a way to pack the seeds and the sort and sources, and it all just slotted into place. So we were like, should we just do it then? And we did. And now here we are. So it took us 6 months to build a seed company from scratch.
And you have a seed company, you have offices now, I can see behind you. So has that, I mean, so much going on. Is Kate a Sagittarian as well?
She's not, no. Oh, is she? No, our birthdays are very close, but I think she's missed the Sagittarian thing, but she is driven. So we are the perfect team, I would say. I'm the creative and the veggie obsessed person. And Kate is very, very business minded and brilliant in digital marketing, where my skills lie in social media and that kind of marketing. So between the two of us, it works very well. And we're very aligned. She's also very creative, which helps. And so far, we haven't really disagreed on anything, which is really good.
So much easier, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I'm the one that comes in the morning and goes, I've had an idea. We could do this and it'll be amazing and we can do this. And she'll go, I'll check the numbers and let you know.
You've got a great balance. So you've got the ideas, you've got someone that's thinking about, okay, yeah, let's think about this rationally, the numbers, as you say. And you've said to me that what you're trying to do is to get seeds seen as buying ingredients for cooks and chefs, and to get more people growing. Which is a bit of a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
It is, and it's funny. When you think about it, it's such an obvious connection, and yet it's not one that's really there. Not enough, I think. So you have gardeners and people that like to grow food who will go and buy seeds, and then you have cooks and chefs who are passionate about food, and they tend to come and buy ingredients from a supplier. But if you want the best and most inspiring and broadest range of interesting ingredients to work with, really the only way you're going to be able to do that is by growing it yourself. And then you can also ensure the provenance of that food. So you know what's gone into it. You know it's completely chemical free. You know it's, you know, it's filled with your love and that you've poured your heart and soul into it, which always is more inspiring when you finally get down and a chance to eat that food. So it's such an obvious connection, and yet it's one that you don't really see very much within the seed industry thus far. So it's one that we really wanted, a message that we really wanted to drive home, that this is food. It should taste amazing. And you do eat with your eyes, so it should look amazing as well.
And your seeds are also being grown this year in the kitchen garden at Kew and also at Le Manoir, no less.
Yes, we're very excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I have to say, so we started, we launched the seeds, the seed website in November. And then we actually got the seeds. So that was pre-sale. And then we actually got the seeds in December and started shipping out. So I think we're in our third full month of trading at the moment. And already the support we've had from industry has been absolutely amazing. So yes, Kew is growing some of our varieties. And I think we're opening new varieties up for sale that haven't been available here. So I think people, and they are heritage and historical varieties. So people are really interested in trying them and growing them because they're so different from what's been available before. Mm. And then we are very, very lucky. And you get a bit of an exclusive here, Mike. We really wanted to drive home this message that seeds are food. They are an ingredient, and buying seeds is just your best route to the best ingredients. So we're very lucky that message really lines up with Raymond Blanc's message, Chef Raymond Blanc, who loves what we're trying to do and is going to be on our stand at the Chelsea Flower Show cooking with our varieties on press day, which is so exciting.
Oh my goodness me, that is absolutely incredible. So Chelsea,
yeah,
a big thing. You must be, aside from everything else, living and dreaming about Chelsea Flower Show. So what else can you tell us about Chelsea?
Yeah, so I think both Kate and I have just been overwhelmed by the amount of support that we've had, obviously from the general public, who have been amazing and really, really supported our small business, but also from industry. And when you do something kind of quite new and quite different, especially in a very established industry like horticulture, you never know how it's going to go down. And we've had the most amazing support. You know, obviously we have Raymond and Le Manoir supporting us, but also the RHS has been incredible, and they really understand what we're trying to do and love it and have been really supportive and have so allowed us into the Chelsea Flower Show, which is just the most amazing opportunity. So the plan is that we're exhibiting in the Great Pavilion, which if anyone's ever been to the show, they will be familiar with this enormous marquee in the middle of the show where you have all the nurseries displayed. So we're in there. What we want to do is, because everything we're doing is trying to kind of break the mold of seeds and veg growing and show it in a completely different way. So that message continues with our plans for Chelsea. So we are creating a stand that is inspired by Renaissance art. So as a general rule at RHS shows, you tend to find kind of vegetables are shown either in the kind of classic kitchen garden style. So you've got your rows of beautiful big vegetables and a little greenhouse and, you know, very classic kitchen garden setup. Or you have a kind of village show on steroids kind of thing with perfect huge carrots and, you know, everything looking perfect and all displayed like you would in a village show. So we really wanted to move well away from that kind of vibe and show vegetables and edibles in kind of on a par with the ornamentals at the show. So obviously you get much more ornamental material in RHS shows than you do edible things. And I find that ornamental gardening is often shown as quite aspirational and quite upmarket, and, you know, whereas veg growing is quite homespun and traditional and a little bit of an old school vibe, which is a lovely vibe, but there is a whole new set of gardeners coming into horticulture, and for them that type of image just doesn't resonate at all. So it's to engage with a whole new crowd of people that we are doing what we're doing. So we've taken our inspiration from Renaissance, the old Renaissance masters, who were very, very good at making the humble vegetable look something far more exciting and beautiful. So we're creating an art-inspired display. And we're working with an amazing florist called Hazel Gardner. She's going to help us on the display, because what we're doing requires, it's definitely going to require the help of a florist to be able to last the week. And that's not a skill set that Kate and I have. And then there will be, because we are actively proud of having grown out of the social media gardening community, we're very proud of that. And I think the social media gardeners kind of get a bit of a bad rap sometimes within the industry. They're a bit overlooked or maybe considered not so serious. Well, but we're very proud of our roots in social media. And so we are creating the ultimate selfie opportunity on our stand. So people will be able to come and there'll be an opportunity for them to become part of the art. And we're working with another amazing florist called Sophie Powell, who is UFO London, as in unidentified floral object on Instagram, who creates these amazing headdresses out of flowers and things. So she's going to be creating some edible headdresses for us that people can have a try on.
Wow. I mean, so exciting. And it's such great news to hear that new blood coming into Chelsea will start to change the look and the feel of it, because with the greatest of respect, the greatest flower show on the earth, it doesn't change much year on year. So it's good to actually now see new talent, new creations coming in, just to give it a bit of a boost. That's such great news to hear. So good luck with that. I can't wait to see you there.
Thank you. I think we'll need it.
Finally, see, God, with what you've done so far. But then not just the Chelsea Flower Show, Hampton Court as well.
Yeah, suckers for punishment, I think that's called. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we are also doing Hampton Court. So we will do a kind of slightly scaled down version of the same kind of display that we produced for Chelsea. So anyone that isn't able to make it to Chelsea can come, has another chance to come and see what we've created and get involved with that. And we're also very excited to be working again with Sophie Powell, yeah, the florist there, who has been asked to do the RHS letters. So, you know, the big RHS letters that we're all, basically everyone that goes to the show wants to have a photograph in front of. So she's creating the RHS letters for Hampton Court, and we are partnering with her to do the first edible letters for RHS. Well, what we think is, we can't find any history of them being edible before.
You know, everything you say, I keep coming back to, have to do things full on, no half measures, true. My goodness me, Lucy, you are just sort of like pushing that to the limit. But again, good luck for Hampton, good luck for Chelsea. Look forward to seeing the edible letters, the RHS letters. Before we finish, because time has gone by so quickly, there's so much I could ask. Unfortunately, it's just an hour or so we have to chat. How does everything you do, I mean, you are incredibly busy, how does it impact the actual growing of your own fruit and veg, your own produce? Do you find there are times when you think, gosh, I haven't been back to the garden, haven't actually got out there because I've been doing all of this?
It has changed my relationship with the garden. In fact, the whole garden has changed now, to be honest. So, and it's kind of evolved with my approach to it. So it's probably quite timely. But the piece of land that we had where, you know, we created the homestead and the original plan for the garden was to be as self-sufficient as possible from that piece of land, that is simply not an option anymore. There is no time. Trying to be self-sufficient is pretty much a full-time job in itself. So, but what that area will be the trial garden and the seed farm for the seed company. Right. So we trial all the varieties that we grow. So most of the range is made up from things that I've grown for years anyway, and I genuinely recommend them. And anything new that we add in, we trial in the garden. So that, you know, anyone that's buying seeds know that it comes with genuine recommendation. These are brilliant varieties. And then for some of the varieties that we sell are so rare that there is nowhere else that we can get them. We can't source a seed. There's no suppliers. They're just not grown anywhere. So we have to grow them ourselves. And so that is also our seed farm. So I have now someone helping me on that area, because there's so much to grow and so little time to do it in. But I still, even this morning, in my pajamas with my cup of tea in hand, the first place I go is into my little jungle room, which is our propagation area, to see if any of my tomatoes have popped up yet. So the delight is still there. The love is still there. I love what I do. It's one of my favorite times of year is when you have the first little hints of green start popping up on all the seeds that you've sown. I love it. I can't get enough of it. It's just the scale has changed, shall we say.
It's strange, isn't it? So like, as I speak to so many people, and for myself included, we get involved in the media or running a business, and our passion, our own gardens, I spend time looking out at my garden whilst I'm working on a podcast or doing whatever, writing. And it's that, just that connection. But I, like you, I have to go out there. I have to be out there with the garden during the course of the day. Even if, as you say, it's just a wander around with your PJs on with a cup of tea in hand.
Yeah. I think we're lucky that we have created careers out of something that we're passionate about. I still feel lucky to have been able to do that. You know, you do spend so much of your life at work. It should be something that fulfills you and something that makes you happy. And so I think we are very lucky, you and I, that we have managed to do what we love.
So what next for you, Lucy? Sort of like, so much going on. Are there, I'm almost afraid to ask, are there still things on your bucket list that you think, I'd love to do this, I'd love to do that? And if so, can you share any of that with us?
Do you know what? It's funny. This is the bucket list item. This seed company is what I've been working towards. So with all the knowledge that I've gained and all the people that I've met around the world and my work with Baker Creek, which is an amazing seed company in America that I've done photography for years, and their mentorship, everything has been leading to this point. And I feel like, although I am so tired, there is not enough time in the world, I love every minute of it. I love what we're doing. And it's, although what I'm doing isn't going to change, essentially, there's so many varieties I want to find and bring to the UK market, to people here. And that's kind of the rolling mission now. So I'm so happy with where we are and what we've created. So we have a lot of plans for the business, but it will always have the core value. It is all about edibles. Yeah. And it's all about open pollinated varieties.
Well, it's been an absolute joy catching up, hearing what you're doing, hearing how the seed company's going. Good luck. Have another fantastic year. 2024 sounds like it's going to be another great one for you both. Taking time out of your schedule, Lucy. It's been brilliant chatting again.
No problem. It's lovely to speak to you as always, Mike. Take care.
Well, there is one very busy lady, and I wish Lucy and Kate every success with the UK Heirloom Seed Company and for their stands at both Chelsea and Hampton this year. So, if you're heading along to either of those shows, do make sure you pop along and say hello to them both. As always, my thanks to you for listening and for making the Mike the Gardener Gardening podcast the success that it's become. And if you're new, welcome along. It's lovely to have you here. Don't forget to follow and subscribe, as there are more great episodes in the pipeline. Now, as always, I will be back next week with another fascinating guest. But just now, the sun is shining for the first time in a long, long time. So I'm heading out into my own garden to see what needs doing out there. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.